Okay. Good morning again. Now, what we are going to have here is a talk from Paul Price, who is going to be performing at our banquet on tomorrow night. And his band is rather unique in that it is a resurrection of the music that we would have been listening and dancing to if it was about, 60, 70, 75 years ago. And this one of the reasons why we decided to include this type of entertainment in the banquet is this gives us a rare opportunity to be able to listen to the music that we otherwise only hear, for the most part, recorded acoustically, but now hear it live. And that might give us some idea on how we should properly adjust our playback equipment when we listen to those old acoustical dance band orchestras. So here now is Paul Price.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Beale, and it's great to be here. I'm Paul Price. As said, we will be performing tomorrow night, and this is dance music between the turn of the century and about 1930, the late 20s. Turn of the century is when ragtime revolutionized dance music in America and all over the world. And about 1928-29 is when the lushness of talking pictures and radio started changing the way music was put together. And I first got interested in the music of the 20s when I was a very small child. My father, who had been a teenager in the 20s, owned a copy of Paul Whiteman's Whispering record, Victor number 18690, if you keep him track. Okay. And so I've been into it ever since. And I started several years ago transcribing my favorite records. I transcribed that one. You'll hear us do that tomorrow night, both sides, the Japanese Sandman's the other side. And we do the exact same arrangement, the slide whistle and everything. So. Well, I'd like to start out, say, in 1899 with The Cakewalk in the Sky by Ben Harney. This is played by the Victor Dance Orchestra, recorded in April of 1905. And just to show where they were at the turn of the century, and I'll talk briefly about the way the orchestra was comprised. I'll play the record first. Number on the record. Right. 31412 was a 12-inch grand prize. The orchestra is just one solid unit, and nobody takes a solo, and there was a certain craft to the arranging. It was developed through the centuries and came to a head with Gilbert and Sullivan and Johann Strauss, and was now being applied to ragtime. Basically, you would have the first violin up here, the trumpet in octaves, and woodwinds filling in the middle part. And your bass is on the bass, the cello sometimes doubling it, sometimes doubling the tenor line. And the rhythm, the chorus, for the second violin and the viol, sort of interleaved like that. So you get a solid unit. Waltzes or two steps or marches was the same crap. Play a little bit more. Years this relates to the recording, 15 years with the actual music. We're in 1915. The craft is pretty much the same. I'm going to play you a waltz, I think the Perdita Waltz by McKee's orchestra, Frank W. McKee, who worked with Vernon and Irene Castle as well as James Reese Europe, who is known to have worked with the Castles. McKee did mainly waltzes. He wrote most of them himself. And this is 1915 Perdita Waltz, Victor record 35481, a double-sided 12-inch. And one thing to notice, we're going to talk about changes in instrumentation. This is still the standard dance orchestra of the day and outside talent. Now, this orchestra had a string bass in it, and they recorded with the string bass. I don't know if you'll be able to hear it. In my stereo equipment at home, with playing with the equalizer and the tone controls, I can pull it out and hear it. And, of course, recording studios orchestras, the in-house groups at that time, used tuba. So, this is one example of outside talent and how they sounded out there. That's how they sounded in the studio. And you still have woodwinds, flute and clarinet, your full complement of strings, first violin, second violin, viola, cello, bass, and a subordinated brass section, usually one trumpet, one trombone, and piano and drums. That, by the way, is what my orchestra is. And here we go. Ready to walk.
Thank you.
popular music arranging, though it hadn't changed terribly much in the 15 years, it had gotten more colorful. They were using the woodwinds in a more florid way. The cello would come out more, and they were just using it to more of its fuller potential. I'm going to play you, also I don't know if you could hear the bass, it was probably bowed. That was the usual way in that time. I'm going to play you the last of that strain of orchestras, Joseph C. Smith, who I think was active in New York. It's difficult to find out much about these people up until Paul Whiteman, but I think this is in New York, and they're the last major dance orchestra that did not have saxophones. As a matter of fact, they didn't have any woodwinds at all. They were the full complement of strings, the two brass, and drums and piano. No banjo yet either. This is Joseph C. Smith in January 1917, Havanola, Foxtrot, Victor Record number 1, number 35615. Of this, and I wanted to share with you a little bit of the problems of doing this, because they didn't have woodwind players. I have two woodwind players, and I think it's stupid not to have them doing something. So last year's parts have the flute and clarinet filling in little holes in the harmonies, and so they're not the florid decorative parts. And I'm trying to figure out what sort of decorative parts would fit if Smith had had them, you know, sort of a what-if situation, but trying to do it in a totally 1917 vein so you're not being influenced by the 40s or 50s or something. It's a real challenge. I started the parts earlier in the week hoping to have them today, and it's hard. Maybe next year. Anyway, here's my own group from last year's demonstration tape.
Thank you.
By the way, we added the guitar. If you have a guitar, it just blends in with the piano. It's 1917, and the original Dixieland Jazz Band has just splashed over the country and is out to conquer the world, just as we're going over there to like the Germans, I guess. And the wars tend to bring changes. After the war, they always say, well, we're going to have a new kind of this and a new kind of that. It's a new age. Just like after World War II, they decided we're going to have a new kind of record, the LP or the 45, which is it, you know. After the First World War, they decided they were going to have a new kind of dance music, and it was going to be influenced by this jazz. Of course, the jazz shocked a lot of people. If you're not totally familiar with it, the original Dixieland Jazz Band was very loud, primitive, raucous, rebellious music, and a fresh trend-setting thing. But as always happens to these loud, brash musics, when the young kids who do it or buy it get a little bit older, it mellows out, and you can't keep it rebellious. And it will sooner or later influence mainstream music. And we're talking about mainstream music here. And how it was put together and what paths it took. So this is Art Hickman I'm going to play. He was the first of the modern big bands. And he started right here in San Francisco, as a matter of fact. And in 1919, he reached New York, got onto Columbia Records, and was a big seller. He was the hottest name. And he had two saxophones. There'd been saxophone ensembles such as the Six Brown Brothers. They'd been vaudeville favorites, but never in the dance orchestra. You also have banjo. There'd been ragtime banjo. People like Wes Ossman and Fred Van Epps had been recording since before the turn of the century, but in small banjo ensembles or solos. Now, but you never had it in the dance orchestra. And also, with the bass, you may be able to hear the string bass on this. Instead of the traditional bowing, he had the habit of playing everything pizzicato. Again, another modern sound when you put it all together. This one is called Patches. It was one of the best selling of Art Hickman's 1919 records. He made dozens that year, all within a 5-day period. This is Patches, written by Robertson Callahan, and I'm going to play the entire record for you. It's Columbia, number A2814, recorded in September 1919. And so you have two saxophones But notice that unlike the modern dance orchestra, they're not a section. They play against each other all the time. And this is the jazz influence. Everybody doing his own thing, but it's not terribly outrageous. Not like the ODTB. Patches. By Art Hickman's orchestra. So that's a major departure from everything that's gone before in dance music. And it's a florid style and breezy. But that style only lasted for 2 years because Art Hickman's protege, who also started here in San Francisco, Paul Whiteman, went down to Los Angeles in 1920, and then they had a tour to the East Coast, New Jersey, around the summer of 1920, and they got signed for Victor Records. He had some different ideas about how to use this new lineup that had banjo and two saxophones and more prominent brass and usually one or two violins and no cello or viola or anything like that, and a string bass. And they made their first records for Victor in August of 1920. And for the first time, a popular outside talent band decided to bow to the recording engineer's ideas. So At this time in 1920, when Paul Whiteman played a job someplace, they played with the string bass or the pizzicato. But when they went to the recording studio to put it on record, the guy played both instruments, he played tuba. And but more importantly, Paul Whiteman sort of zapped a kind of conformity into these musicians. No longer is it a florid style, but a chunky style. The banjo is much more prominent. The saxes play together instead of against each other. And he has the saxes sometimes against the brass. Sometimes it's all together. And he played violin in his early days. This selection is Avalon, Just Like a Gypsy, Medley Foxtrot, Victor Record number 35701, recorded 23rd August 1920, same day as Whispering. They were released as companion records, but this one went out of print early because it was a 12-inch. And the 12-inch was fading from popular appeal. Avalon. Sound replacing another new sound barely a year old swept the country, and within a few months virtually every major dance orchestra was imitating Whiteman's sound, and they liked the tuba. So by the end of 1921, tuba was the main bass instrument. Every band had a banjo. Usually they had two saxophones and that lineup. Well, by the end of 1921, Whiteman had added a third saxophone, a second violin, and a second trumpet. So that was the beginning of the big band getting bigger. I don't have any 1921 examples, but I'm going to play, what's next? My next example is Wonderful One, Waltz. Paul Whiteman again, number 19019 from January 1923, a style that Paul Whiteman originated for violin writing. I think by this time he had three violins, 1923 now. He was, all through the 20s, he was an innovator in arranging styles, and he was ahead of everybody else in having the third saxophone and in having this new type of violin writing. It had been found in classical music and sometimes before, but now it was prominent. Instead of dividing the violins, with having a first violin playing the melody and second and viola doing rhythm. He had a banjo to do rhythm and a piano to do rhythm. So you have three violins all playing melodic stuff in close harmony. And usually in their high register, or playing unison in their low register. So this is wonderful one. I have only about 10 minutes left. I'm not sure that I'll get clear to 1928. I'll do as far as I can. I have an example of another band imitating the Whiteman style. This one's from December 1922, Down in Maryland, composed by Kalmar and Ruby, played by Gene Rodemick's or Rodemick's Orchestra on Brunswick 2391. And this is the next development. I think this is still a two saxophone band, but they've gotten the new blend, just as Whiteman had gotten to. But by 1922-23, the bands had a nice swing to them. And no more real major departures in the structure of the band. Like Art Hickman established what instruments they would play. Paul Whiteman sort of told all the instrumentalists how they would play them, and then the thing just grew. And it grew steadily into the swing era. And I'm not going to get that far. There are other people who cover the swing era in the early 30s. I'm going to try to get to how that happened. So this is Down in Maryland, and it's one of the gently swinging 1922 numbers. Thank you. again, they're starting to do even more with the instruments they have, bringing out one in a solo. More influence from the jazz, but also the arranging craft. Well, by 1924, the Charleston craze was in full swing, and in listening to a whole continuum of music chronologically, you can just hear them cranking up the tempo machine. Things were getting frantic, and as hot as possible was the order of the day. And not just from the hot bands, we were talking again about the normally staid mainstream dance orchestras. And I have three excerpts, I'm gonna play them all in a row, from the 1924-25 period. The first is from My Road, Foxtrot, Paul Whiteman's orchestra, number 19461, Victor, recorded September the 15th, 1924. The next one is Coconut Trot, Foxtrot, written by Arnheim, Lyman, and Lopez, Abe Lyman's California Orchestra from Los Angeles, Brunswick 2749, recorded July the 16th, 1924, and Yes, Sir, That's My Baby by Kahn and Donaldson. This is Coon Sanders' original Nighthawk Orchestra, the first orchestra to be made famous by radio, not records or personal appearances. They were the first band that radio made. And this is the first one you'll hear with a vocal on it. I took two excerpts of this because at 1925 is the beginning of electrical recording, the beginning of crooners, but the vocal on this one is not a crooner. It represents the assertive style before the crooners. And the crooners are going to bring in a whole new thing. So the three. My Road. Fast driving tempo. Great. Hot 1924-25 were. 26, they started calming down, and I have examples of that. 26 started two new threads with the same kind of orchestra. You got the calm, crooner-oriented ballad-type song coming into popularity, and the Spanish song. The Spanish influence was suddenly catching on. You had songs like Valencia, on the Riviera and Barcelona, some of them in 6-8, some of them in tango time. And then, although things were getting calm, some of the best hot tunes, like Ain't She Sweet, still had to come out in 1927. They were still doing them, but the orchestras were just getting huge by this time. Whiteman, when he inherited Gene Goldkett's star jazz man, had a superb orchestra with at least five saxophones, two trombones, three or four trumpets. You know, anything Benny Goodman would have dreamed of, Whiteman had it in 27, 28. with a string section to boot, including sometimes cello, and string bass and tuba. He brought his string bass back in 27. And the rhythm was still fast and chunky and proud. And but then when the Depression came, this very lush music got slower and sweeter. And that's how you got to the early 30s. I don't know really how to wrap up, but relating this to my orchestra that you'll hear tomorrow night, it's we end in 1927. I didn't bring any of our current demo tape. We have the Varsity Dragon tape now. That was one of the big hot tunes of 1927, and it's about as lush as we get. I guess I can't really wrap it up because music continued, right? And I can't. I can't, so I'll see you later. Thank you very much.
That has got to be one of the most diplomatic ways of getting out of having been rushed at the end of a talk that I have heard in about 10 or 15 years of Ars conventions, where, believe me, you are not the first one to have been, in a sense, given the hook.